Howdy, friends, and welcome into the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TC Horned Frogs on SI. I'm your host, just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native with very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU, and I'm joined by my partner, Crime, who seems to keep disappearing to and from screen, the voice of thekillerfrogs.com. All right, there you go. He's got to
Not
get
a
his...
beer, not a beer. It's a sparkling water. Let me clarify.
All right,
that.
there you go. Sparkling water. He is the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andres. This is episode 20 of our show covering TCU football and a smattering of topics related. It is Monday, excuse me, the 4th of November at the time of this recording. And JD, tomorrow's a big day in the country. Lot of decisions made by a large group of people. And, it's going to determine a lot going into our future, and I think that everyone knows what I'm talking about. The first playoff ranking of the season comes out tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
I'm sure some people thought I was talking about something else. I'm not touching that one.
Yeah.
I'm not touching that one. But the first playoff ranking of the season comes out tomorrow. So my question for you, JD, as it stands right now, who are your Power Four champions?
So I'm going to go with, God, surprisingly, the SEC is the hardest to predict.
I know.
I am going to go with Oregon to win the Big Ten. Plot twist, because they're going to play Indiana in the Big Ten championship. But we'll talk about that in 2 weeks. I'm going to go with Miami in the ACC. I just think Cam Ward is on a different level right now. The Big 12, shocker, I'm going with Colorado. I think they're going to play themselves back into it, and I think I'm okay with that, actually. And for the SEC, I am going to go with Georgia.
Wow. Okay. All
yeah.
right. That one I didn't expect. Okay.
Yeah, if you had asked me before A&M completely embarrassed themselves in South Carolina, I probably would have said
you
them.
Would have said the Aggies. Yep.
But, I mean, there's a potential chance that there's an eight-way tie for first place by the end of the season, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The SEC's nuts this year.
Yeah. And it's funny because the SEC is looked at as anyone can beat everyone, but you look at the Big 12 and it's everybody sucks. So, funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're going to like part of mine, and you're going to really hate part of mine.
If you say
as
SMU for the ACC, yeah, we will fight.
Let me get started. Okay, yeah, I'll start with that, actually. Let's go ahead. Yeah, give me the Mustangs. Man, if you know me, you know that, look, number one, when a team faces adversity, and they get punched in the mouth and they take a game after riding a hot streak, then they come back angry. And I think that's what Miami's going to do for these next couple weeks. But I think that SMU, like, I've got to ride the hot hand that has faced adversity in almost every game anyway, aside from this week. I really think that SMU is what probably the most underrated program in college football. I really think they should be ranked higher in the AP rankings. And I mean, of course, the playoff rankings come out tomorrow. I think they should be higher than what people are expecting. Give me SMU. Miami finally gets punched in the mouth by Duke. And if the Iron Skillet game is any indication, you cannot get off to a slow start against this SMU team. And that's exactly what Miami did against Duke. And I think that they're probably going to do the same thing against SMU. I think they're going to come in sleeping, because remember that the remaining schedule for Miami, it's not the toughest, but they're going to get a lot of the teams that hate them the most, and they're going to get everybody's best shot up to this point. Nobody in the ACC is going to give SMU their best shot. No one's thinking about them. They're still thinking SMU is going to choke. They're still waiting for, not to bring this up the day before Election Day, but an October surprise to happen or something like that. So, yeah, give me SMU in the ACC. That's just my opinion. I could be very wrong. I've been on a very, very cold year of opinions. So you shouldn't be mad about that. If I'm predicting SMU to win the ACC, they're not going to win the ACC. Big 12, you know what? I'm back on the Texas Tech train. That win at Ames, you know what? And the way this conference is going, it's so freaking crazy, man. And they're not eliminated from it. And I believe in the Red Raiders. I really do. I know you
They're
don't like
losing
it.
this weekend.
We'll see. You can't say that. I would have told you last week that the Cyclones were going to spank Tech to Kingdom Come. You can't tell me they're already losing. You can't. It's Monday. You can't tell me they're losing this weekend.
I can and I will.
We'll talk about that on a Wednesday. Fine though. I'm riding Texas Tech. I to me they brought themselves back into the conversation for me. I really like the Red Raiders, and I know you don't like it, but that's what I'm going with. Give me Texas Tech to win the Big 12. In the SEC. Yeah, I like it. When you face adversity, you get hit in the mouth, you come back. That's exactly what the Aggies just got. And they got a bye week. They got a week to stew over that, and they're going to come out hungrier than ever. And I think they beat Texas. So give me the Aggies to at least go to Atlanta. But yes, at the moment, before the first playoff rings come out, I've got A&M winning the SEC, in my opinion. And then the Big Ten, I'm actually with you. Give me Oregon. I really, really like Oregon and how they look. Yeah, they're going to end up getting Indiana, and I would root for Indiana in that game just because the Hoosiers have never done anything in my life. But yeah, I'd give me Oregon on that one. Go ahead.
I'm gonna save all of my words for Wednesday.
All right. Well, I mean, hey, you can save all your words for Wednesday about the A&M thing, but they get the bye week, so we're gonna have to
Oh,
wait
I've
on that
got a
one.
lot about the Texas Tech words too.
That one, we'll talk about on Wednesday.
I've got a whole
But
90 seconds devoted to Texas Tech still. So.
there you go, there you go, folks. Just to clear the air, obviously today, tomorrow is a big day in the country with a lot of things going on. We're not going to go into it, but JD and I, we're just hoping. We don't care how you voted or how you hope it goes. We just hope that you listen and enjoy this podcast. And we hope that if you're hearing this tomorrow, you're hearing it on election day, that you can just take a few minutes and just enjoy some football talk. And boy, do we have a lot of it to get
Unless you're a
through.
TCU fan, you might not enjoy this.
They probably won't enjoy it, but they probably want to hear it. So it's at least a few minutes out of their day where they're not thinking about other things going on. So, yeah, folks, if you're listening, we don't care what you know, where who you voted for, or anything like that, or how you feel. We just hope that we can provide some relief for you for these next few minutes and just talk some college football. And let's dive into it because we choked. This wasn't great. Lot of mismanagement, in my opinion, and there's one play in particular that I'm absolutely going to dive into and just unleash on. I'll get into that in a second. But look, from an outside perspective, as someone who's not like down in the depths of my heart, a TCU fan, this was a great game and a game that really just adds to the TCU Baylor lore. I'm not upset about that. But you had every opportunity to win this game. And especially because, as JD, I know you're going to say, Avalos did not call a bad game defensively, but we gave up too many big plays, and that's what kept Baylor into it. And then when it came down to it, our offense couldn't score. Like, this one sucked. This season alone has already felt very frustrating. And this game alone just feels like the embodiment of the season thus far. We looked pretty darn decent. And it looked like for a time, hey, we're gonna win this game. And then just the frustration comes back and we do something that just doesn't go our way. And it totally caused us to lose the game. And then of course we lose the game on a final field goal by Isaiah Hankins. By the way, shout out, I think he's the best kicker Baylor's ever had. But yeah, just go ahead, JD. Before I go into exactly what I'm going to go into, just your overall thoughts on Saturday.
I wrote about it today. I wrote about it yesterday, and it was published today that there's something that's in common with every single one of the losses TCU has had. And it's three simple words that Sonny Dykes has said after every game. We were out coached. You can't continue to rely on that. You can have the best practices in the world all week you want, but at some point, we're judging you based on your results on the field on Saturday, not your results in practice during the week. So yeah, take your great practices. And I'm sure the guys are, busting their tails all week during practice. And they're playing their hearts out on the field. But they don't control the plays called. They don't control not going for it on fourth down. They don't control what's going to happen in the booths between the coaches and who they're going to sub in for personnel and when they're going to sub a package in or not. Those lie solely on the coaches. The line that Sonny likes to use is that when a team wins a close game, it's all on the players, and when a team loses a close game, it's all on the coaches. No, I'm very, very fair about giving the coaches staff their flowers. I gave Kendall Briles his flowers for the past 3 weeks about how the offense has been doing in the red zone. Do I think Kendall Briles called a great game this game? I think it was a good game. I don't think it was great. I think we're still trying to run the ball too much. Like, you got to commit to just throwing the ball, man. Like, running the ball isn't working. The Savion package is working, but Baylor started to key on it. And teams are going to continue to key on it. When you continue to search for answers and you say, we're getting outcoached, maybe the answers are right there. You basically summed it up is this game basically put into 60 minutes what this entire season has been. It has been, wow, this defense looks amazing. Like, this is the defense that was promised. Wow, this offense looks great. And then all of a sudden, you're like, where'd the offense go? Did the defense stop caring? And then they turn it on. You can't decide when you want to play at your best. You have to play at your best for a full 60 minutes. Not for 35 out of the 60.
Yeah, and I mean, everything on paper suggests that this was a great game for TCU. Not so much the yards per carry in the running game, as you just mentioned, but Hoover throwing for 333 yards. Jack Besh and Savion Williams caught for over 90 yards. McAllister at 3 for 48. Everything looks to be on paper a good game, especially offensively, a good game. But I agree with you. I think we're relying on the run too much, and I think that came out in the play calling. By the way,
It's
how about Savion throwing for a touchdown?
who's been calling for that play to happen for a while now.
You have.
It's the little things, Nolan.
Right.
It's the little things. It was always Josh Hoover turned the ball over too much, and it was always if Josh Hoover wouldn't turn the ball over, then TCU would dominate games. He didn't turn the ball over once this game.
Yep.
He went 26 for 35. He had two drops. Do you know what the drops were? The
One of them
drop?
was in the end zone, if I remember correctly.
No, one was the wide open Savion Williams pass that he would have scored.
Oh, yep.
And the other one was the Eric McAllister drop that would have got TCU a first down with less than 4 minutes to go in the game. They had two drops that came at two of the biggest moments in the game. It is the little things that makes the difference.
Yeah.
And this team just hasn't been able to do the little things all year. And then we fall back on, well, guys just weren't prepared. We just didn't do a good enough job as a coaching staff. It's like the horse is dead. Stop beating it.
At some point you're gonna have to do a good enough job as a coaching staff, or just figure out something else to blame, or just be honest of what you think is actually going wrong.
Would you say Sonny Dykes has a hotter seat right now than Dave Aranda?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And it's
And I
crazy
would not have
because if
said
I
that at the
had,
beginning of the
yeah,
season.
if I had asked you that question at the beginning of the season, you would have laughed.
No way in hell. I would have told you at the beginning of the season Dave Aranda's fired at the end of this year. I think he just got himself an extension with these last 2 weeks.
And I think he deserves it. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a
I do too.
fantastic coach.
He's a great man, and he's obviously shown this season alone how good of a coach he actually
He's a
can
pure
be.
X's and O's coach. He's not a player's
Yes, he
coach.
is. No, oh, well,
Well,
oh, well, working with him all last year, I'll disagree on that opinion, but
this is probably Baylor's least talented, like talent-wise, roster that they've had in at least 3 or 4 years, and TCU's most talented they've had in the last 3 or 4 years. And They still lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's coaching.
Yep. One more thing I want to point out before I go into my rant. And this is actually going to be a good segue because defensively we weren't perfect either. And as you said, just you brought up a hypothetical question. Did the defense just stop caring? Baylor was 2 for 2 on fourth down. Now, you can overlook that because so was TCU. TCU was 2 for 2 on fourth down. Baylor was 8 for 15 on third down. That is over half the time on third down. The defense could not get off the field. The Frogs were 4 for 12 on third down. Baylor was 8 for 15. You got to get off the field on third down, man.
It's the same song and dance it has been all year. They're great on first and second down, and then they can't get off the field on third down.
Yep. So I'm going to go on a rant. And JD, I know you're going to end up clipping this and putting this on Twitter. And you know what? Go ahead. Fine. I want this to get out. I've watched a lot of football over my almost 26 years of life. And oh, JD doesn't even want to stick around for this one. His video and mic have been cut
It looks better for the
out.
clipping.
Fine. All right. All right. You're going to give me the floor. I like it. Okay. Let's do this. I have certain pet peeves when it comes to football, and this is probably my biggest one. And I see it happen over and over again. And here's the fact of the matter. If you go back to the 90s and the 80s, defensive coordinators were not doing this in the situation. It's fourth down. They're not in field goal range. There is, I believe, just over a minute to go. All you've got to do is get a stop. And then you either force overtime or you get the ball back. Granted, you have no timeouts, but you have the chance to get the ball back and get in the end zone. You had to have known what was going to happen. I think everybody in McLean Stadium knew it was going to happen. Me and everybody I was with knew it was going to happen. They were going to throw an underneath route, whether that was a 5-yard hitch route on the outside, whether that was a slant route or a dig. It ended up being the dig route, but it doesn't matter. They weren't going for the big play. They were going for the first down. They needed 9 yards. Why is our secondary playing 8 yards back? Get up on them, press, get them off their routes, disrupt the passing game. You disrupt the wide receivers, you at least give the defensive line a little extra time to rush and force the quarterback into a bad pass or even get a sack. What? There's no reason you need to be playing that far back when you know they need 9 yards and that's all they're going to go for. They're smart enough to know we just need the first down. They knew all they needed was a field goal. It's not like we were up by five and they were going to try to pull a big play because they needed to get the end zone. No, they needed a field goal to win. All they needed was a first down. And if it was third down, they didn't even need to get the first down to be in field goal range. We got a break by it being fourth down, and yet we're still dropping back 9 yards off the line of scrimmage. And we're letting these receivers run these underneath routes. And amazingly, the coverage still ended up being decent on the play itself, but you still allowed him to get up the middle and allowed Sawyer Robertson to put just an absolute dime over the middle for the first down. Very next play, you give up a big run play that gets another first down and sets up a chip shot field goal for Isaiah Hankins. That play, I mean, that is my biggest pet peeve in all of football. Press. Get after them. You don't need to be playing prevent defense when the game's tied. You do that when they need the end zone, right? Or shoot, even if you're up. But not when the game's tied and you know they've got the game by a field goal. Press. Get up on them. Force a play to happen. Don't sit back and let it happen in front of you because that's how you give up a first down, and that's exactly what happened. I'm done, JD.
So it's funny you mentioned that because I knew you would. I want to talk about it because you said who didn't know that was going to happen? Sonny Dykes didn't know that was going to happen. You know why? In his post-game press conference, they asked him, Did you think Baylor was going to go for it on fourth down? And he said, we weren't sure. We were discussing if they were going to. We didn't know if they would. Johnny Hodges comes in after Josh Shuler, after Sonny Dykes. He's asked the same question. Did you think Baylor would go for it? And his words were, obviously. He goes, all of us on the field knew that they were going to go for it because we haven't been able to stop them. And they had had troubles with their kicking game because they were jumping off sides and they'd already missed an extra point. He was like, we knew that they were going to go for it. So everyone knew that they were going to go for it except for Sonny Dykes. I watched the post game press conference. I watched Johnny Hodges. I watched Josh Hoovers, and I was dumbfounded. I even text Barry, our editor, was like, did that actually happen? And he said, yes. Everyone knew that was going to happen. I have no issue with the game that Andy Avalos called. I think if you watch the game, and I've rewatched it now, and I've watched it twice, is that he called a great game. He called blitzes at the right time. It was just the linebackers got washed, or the defensive line just got no pressure. I think he called a fantastic game. And I think the secondary played exceptionally well all night, considering, the shortcomings they've had throughout the year. I think that was one of the most well-rounded secondary level games that we've seen this year. And I think it was just one of those that it was like Baylor just wanted it more at the moment. Johnny Hodges was asked about the fourth and nine play, and he said it was just one of those where it was Baylor got the mismatch they wanted because of the play call, and the secondary player took the outside coverage and he cut in. And I think it's one of those that I think you're looking back on it, the secondary player is going to play the outside coverage because you're trying to guard the sidelines on that. You want to avoid them getting out of bounds if they were to get it, right? Let's run some clock, try to burn a little bit more if they get it on the off chance they get it. And I think it was a contested catch. It wasn't like it was the world's easiest catch. I think it was just like a bang bang play. I'm not mad about it. I'm not mad that it happened. I'm just mad that we're coming out and saying we weren't sure if they were going to go for it.
I hear your point. Obviously, you want to protect the outside when it's late in the fourth quarter, no matter what the situation is. You could be down, up, tied, it doesn't matter. You want to protect the outside so they can't stop the clock. I understand that completely. I also understand the over the middle. Yes, it was a contested catch. That's why I said it ended up being a pretty good, pretty well defended play, actually. It did. My whole point is, you've got to give them a read from the snap, and you've got to make it obvious from the beginning of the play, from the snap of the ball. You've got to get them off their routes. You've got to use that little space where you have to bump them off the route to delay them just half a second, because that's the difference between a sack and an incompletion most of the time, especially on a fourth and nine play like that, when you know. And I actually didn't know that Sonny Dykes said that. I'm actually very disappointed in Sonny Dykes that he said that. I mean, you had to know they needed the first down. What did you think they were going to do? Take a knee and give you the ball back? Of course they were going to go for it. They
I
were out of
think
field goal range.
my only other argument about it is just that I was thoroughly surprised Baylor threw the ball there, because I genuinely thought they would run the ball. They had so much success the last three drives running the ball, and we have seen teams run the ball at fourth and 8+ yards and get success. So I figured it was a run.
And that's why Baylor's coaching staff came away from this game looking like geniuses, because that's exactly what they did on the very next play. And that one went for 14 yards and a first down. And that made Isaiah Hankins' field goal a chip shot. Even with the timeout to ice him, I had no doubt in my mind. I didn't even. My family, if they listen to this or anyone knows me, there's a. They call it the Ruth stance when, there's a tense play coming up. And I always like to say it works about 80% of the time that, whatever I'm pulling for, when I get in that stance, it works out. I didn't even bother. I didn't even bother because I knew Hankins was going to hit it. Those last three plays of the game, we handed Baylor that win. And again, and I want to go back to your point about Avalos. I agree with you 100%. This was not a terribly called game for it was actually a very well called game defensively. The problem was we gave up the big plays. That was the big problem. That was where they got most of their touchdowns was from the big plays, right? That was the problem. That's why they were still in the game. Avalos, I think, called a good game. I'm with you on that. But in the last three plays, we handed them that win. That it all came down to it. Had we pressed and we forced a stop on fourth down, and by some miracle of God, go down and score before the end of the game, or even force overtime, win it overtime, I would point back to this exact same play and say that's exactly what you do on fourth down. You get them off their rhythm. You step up into them and say, no, I'm not going to let you sit back and get this play. Instead, we decided to sit back, let their play develop. And even then, we still got a break because it was a contested catch, but it didn't work out that way. You've got to get aggressive in that situation. You don't need to be dropping back that far. They need the first down. Get up on them, force the play. You know, if it was a fourth and 20, then yes, I'd understand dropping back that far. But this is fourth and 9. A slant pass over the middle is a first down. They don't need the post route. You've got to get up and stop it at the beginning when it's a short play. And you should know it was going to be a short play. I don't want to spend much more time on this because I'm frustrated alone. And the fact that you just told me that Sonny Dykes said that, I'm definitely frustrated now because, I mean, look, I'm just a simple guy who runs an RV park. I knew that play was coming. And the fact that he went straight up in the press conference and said that he didn't know that play was coming, that's frustrating. That's really frustrating for me.
My issue with, and I talked about this, is that I think it was called a great game, but not a good game, is TCU outgained Baylor every quarter except the fourth. In the fourth quarter, Baylor had 208 yards. TCU didn't even eclipse 100. Didn't even eclipse 100. It only had 1:40 less of time of possession than Baylor did. It's one of those where, like, I get it. It's a tough to call a game like that for Kendall Briles when you have no running game that you can put your belief in. I mean, Trent Battles look good. Jeremy Payne's look good. You have the Savion package. Like, you have opportunities. I don't know. I'm going to share my final few thoughts, and then we can move on from this. And in this is Kyle Loberman, man. I've got ultimate faith in him as a kicker. Drilled a 46-yard field goal, 47-yard field goal, his season long's 48. Like, he's ice cold. He had his struggles early in the season, and I talked about preseason was that he's going to have his freshman year struggles. Like, that is to be expected. But when the team has needed him the most, he's played exceptionally well. I just very, very happy with what has happened with him and his development and the entire special teams unit as a whole. Minus the delay of game that happened, and you saw Sonny Dykes actually getting upset with Mark Tomadol, which was interesting to see. I don't know. I don't know where you go from here. Because just kind of confused on what the team's identity is. My last thought is Jordan Bailey had one of the greatest catches I've seen a TCU receiver make. The first touchdown of the game. That was an absolutely sick grab. Do you think it was funny that Josh Hoover had, I believe it was Jack Besh, completely wide open by himself about 6 yards to the left, and then made the complicated throw to Jordan Bailey, who came down with it.
I
But
saw that.
that was a sick catch. So props to him, and props to Josh Hoover for making it a little bit tougher on himself for that touchdown.
Well, what's
Oh.
done is done. Go ahead. One more. Go ahead.
One last question. And this is, I know we're going to get into it Wednesday, but last question. Considering the game that happened this past weekend and Oklahoma State, does this give you any form of belief that Oklahoma State gets their first conference win this upcoming weekend?
Oh. Let's save that one for Wednesday.
I just wanted to know, like, I don't want you to tell me if Oklahoma State's going to win. I just want you to know, what does your confidence level change based off what this past weekend's results were in TCU's ability to win? Because had you asked me pre-Baylor game,
I'm going to be honest, it may have actually gotten better because you actually, that's a perfect segue for what we were about to talk about next because it was a quiet week in the Big 12, only four other games. Oklahoma State loses to Arizona State 42-21. I'm not going to lie. Look, my opinion of Baylor and Oklahoma State have both drastically changed from the preseason. And TCU. There are several different things that I can point to through this game that I would tell you we probably should have won by 20 points. Whether it was we gave up a big play, did something stupid, we could have won this game by 20 points. And we didn't. We ended up losing by 3. There's no excuse, in my opinion, for Oklahoma State losing to Arizona State 42-21. There's no excuse for anything Oklahoma State, in my opinion, has done all season. My opinion has not changed. No, I don't see the Cowboys upsetting us. Are we at home? Yeah, we're at
yes,
home. I
6
don't see the
o'clock.
Cowboys upsetting us at home. We'll talk more about that Wednesday. But along the same lines,
I'll save it for what I have a question, but I
you
want to
were
save
so
it.
frustrated. I know you
I
like
want to save it for Wednesday, but I want to ask, like, now before I forget it, would you? This isn't a shot at either one of them. I'm just genuinely curious after the results of this season, who would you rather have as your head coach going forward? Gundy or Sonny Dykes?
Sonny Dykes.
Okay. I think that's the, I
Without a
think.
doubt. And you, that okay, again, perfect segue. You keep setting me up perfectly. Is Gundy fired?
I want to save that for Wednesday because that's why I was asking, is because.
That's what I was going to ask you this whole time, but you kept interrupting me. Is
Yeah.
Gundy fired? You know what? Screw it. We're not saving this for Wednesday. Yeah, he's gone. I'm surprised. Today's Monday. It's the Monday after the game. I'm surprised he's not gone right now. Like, after this one, are you kidding me? With how this season's gone for Oklahoma State? And then you drop this one to Arizona State 42 to 21? How is he not gone already? This is literally the season to set up that Oklahoma State has no excuse. Move on. Especially after a conference championship appearance a year ago. All right, well, glad we got that off our chest. Let's move on to how
He's
about
not
the
getting
Houston.
fired because look at Kirk
He's no,
Ferentz.
he's not. Yeah, he's not gonna get
Look at
fired.
them. They're the same exact coaches.
Yep.
And their schools are right in that mediocre path. Not mediocre, but you expect success, but not too much success. And but they are both loyal to the school. You will never fire either one of them.
I know, and that's gonna end up being the detriment to Oklahoma State. Now let's talk about the Houston Cougars beating the Kansas State Wildcats 24-19.
Quality loss, baby.
Oh Lord. Wow. I mean, really? Really? I know you're happy because like you just said quality loss. But I mean, come on, K-State. Jeez. You still had a chance to get to Arlington.
The pieces of the puzzle are falling together. I said Houston would be better than what they were at the beginning of the season. I said I wasn't sold on Avery Johnson. I said I wasn't sold on Kansas. Don't look at my number one and two finishes for the conference because those don't matter. But yeah, I mean, it was a crazy rainy weather game. I do have a question about this game. Why was Kansas State and Houston allowed to play, but Rice and Navy right next door had to wait 5 more hours?
Because Rice is stupid.
I actually, I think they're very smart.
That
It's quite the contrary.
you know the whole, you know the old saying, book smart but not street smart. There you go. Hey JD, the pieces are falling together. Texas Tech beat Iowa State 23-22 in Ames.
Is this
The Red
not the
Raiders,
story?
man.
Is this
I'm
not the
telling
story of
you.
Texas Tech? When you believe in them, they fail you. When you don't believe in them, they blow your mind.
That's the same story about the Aggies, and I don't want to talk about that one either right now.
They will. Texas Tech is not good.
By the way, I don't know if you watch SEC shorts, but have you seen the
I
last
haven't
two
seen
without
today's. I need to watch it. The battered Aggie
the
syndrome
battered
from
Aggie
last week.
syndrome? Oh my Lord, it's hilarious.
I haven't watched this week's yet. I need to
You
watch it.
need it came out this morning. I've already seen it. You need to watch it. The battered Aggie syndrome returns. It's
Yeah.
hilarious. And the last game of the conference this week, UCF 56, Arizona 12. Does this make you feel better about the game coming up here in the next 2 weeks?
I felt good about this game from the beginning of the year. I knew Arizona wouldn't be able to repeat what they were last year, but I didn't think it would be at the fault of their offense, which is what surprised me. You're wasting potentially the best receiver in the entire draft in Terry Torre McMillan, but I digress. I mean, I'm more worried about the game against Cincinnati than I am Oklahoma State and Arizona.
All right. Well, that's we'll end on that statement. I like that one. I think that's a good statement to end on because we'll be back on Wednesday to preview the upcoming week, and we will have Tori joining us. She has not joined us since the preseason, and I actually wasn't here for that show, so this will be the first time
Oh,
that
yeah,
I
that's right.
am joined by Tori. So we look forward to that. Frog fans, look, tomorrow's a big day. Again, as I said at the top of the show, we don't care what you believe, how you voted. We just hope we give you a little bit of relief on this day. And we're going to be back the day after to talk a little more football. So please join us. We really appreciate you. But it's also a big day because we've got not just the election, but we've got the playoffs and the NFL trade deadline. And a lot of baseball free agency has been going crazy for the past 48 hours. So we'll keep our eyes on that. And by the way, hockey season is now in full swing as well. Go Stars.
And
Frog fans,
basketball, TCU
and
basketball kicked
basketball.
off
Yeah,
tonight.
TCU.
Women's basketball is
Yes.
tomorrow, but we'll
Yeah.
have a baseball podcast this week for you guys to check out about the fall camp.
There you go.
It's the best time of the year for
We're
sports.
in the swing of it, man. We're in the swing of it. Here we
Yeah.
go. Frog fans, that does it for the 20th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, or however you find your podcast. We'll see you on Wednesday with another great show. And we're actually going to do it this time. We've been saying it for weeks now. We keep trying to do two, and we only end up doing one. But it's going to happen this week. And until Wednesday, from my partner, JD Andrus, and everyone at killerfrogs.com, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.